We will go on to case number 3, which is 132102, Brown versus BNSF Railway Company. Hello.
Touch.
Mr. Bruges. I'm not even trying. Just say your name.
George Bruges for Mr. Shannon Brown.
My God, it's spelled the way it sounds. Thank you.
May it please the court. Judge, this is an FVLA case, and as we know, the Congress passed the FVLA in order to compensate injured railroad employees, and the statute is designed to be interpreted liberally to achieve that goal of compensated injured employees. Two things that we talk about a lot in FVLA cases. One is that a jury trial is an important right under the statute for both the defendant and the plaintiff. And secondly, in the McBride case, this court said that the standard of causation is in whole or in part, no matter how slight, and that was affirmed by the United States Supreme Court. Now, Mr. Brown was a track worker, worked for the BNSF since 1996, and if you want an idea of the work he did, there's a whole series of photographs that Dr. Fletcher did at his job site analysis demonstrating, well, number one, that Mr. Brown's a pretty big guy, and you have to be a pretty big guy to do this kind of track work, but showing all these handheld devices, hand tampers, rail grinders, rail saws, that he used in his everyday work activity.
Did Dr. Fletcher have a written job description, and exactly where were Brown's job duties included in his reports?
He describes what his job duties are, and essentially his job duties were these 56 photos.
But did it estimate the amount of time on any given work day he would use the various tools that are displayed in the photos?
No, because there was no day that
measure,
was...
Did it measure in any way the vibrations or effects on the body that those tools would have in used in their intended way?
No. And I think he didn't is because the BNSF concedes that there are no bright-line measurements of using any of these tools, any force and frequency that will necessarily cause someone to have a cumulative trauma disorder.
Well, did he have any evidence that Brown worked with these tools as long or as often as injured employees say he worked with at other railroads?
He had Brown's testimony. He discussed it with Brown. And again, Shannon Brown would work different hours, some days 8, some days 12, some days 16, when he had to have a double shift. Essentially, what Brown described in his deposition was at times when there would be accidents.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is where the support in the record is for his determination that Brown's exposure far exceeded minimal standards for causation. You know, like I'm trying to get to what the basis of that was.
Right, and that is Brown's testimony when he described how many hours he worked and what his job was. It was Dr. Fletcher's experience. I think he had 20 years experience as a company physician for different two different railroads, Norfolk Southern. And,
which is why I asked that question initially. What, you know, did Fletcher really didn't make any reference to comparables in when he worked with the other two railroads, you know, that he'd had this kind of experience, he diagnosed people that had this problem before, and he knew that this kind of equipment led to this kind of injury. That's what I'm trying to find.
And that's kind of a given that there's risk factors for carpal tunnel. And Dr. Fletcher is one of the preeminent experts in this area, and he described his expertise with Illinois worker compensation cases where he's testified, where he's part of the Committee on Illinois Worker Compensation Cumulative Trauma Disorder. He's handled a number of these cases, and he understands a rail grinder is no different than a different type of saw that people in other industrial occupations use. The vibrations are similar. There is no bright line quantity that if you use a rail grinder for, you know, an hour every day for 10 months, you're going to get carpal tunnel. And that's what the Hardiman and the Aparicio cases say, that these are variable for different people. And so what experts in these kind of cases have to do is look at the job duties that the person has and see whether or not he reaches those risk factors. And Dr. Fletcher did look at the NIOSH risk factors for developing cumulative trauma disorders like carpal tunnel syndrome.
Now, Fletcher, like you said, had a lot of experience, and he laid out a reliable methodology, but he didn't follow his own description of that methodology, did he?
Well, he did. He went to the job site. You know, when you talk about doing an investigation to this, there's two things you need. One is the medical evidence on the injured person. And he had all the medical evidence that was available that dealt with Shannon Brown. He knew about his pacemaker. He knew about his allergies. He knew about all the different care and treatment he had during his entire life. There's no medical evidence that the defendant has pointed us to that Dr. Fletcher didn't have. The second thing that Myers says to look at is the work duties. Dr. Fletcher had more knowledge about Shannon Brown's work duties than anyone in any expert case I've ever seen under this circumstance.
Now, you mentioned this Handyman case, the Sixth Circuit case, but in that case, the court found it relevant that the expert quantified the plaintiff's exposure to risk factors. That didn't happen here, did it?
Well, he quantified it in general terms as far as how many years he worked and how many hours he worked per day. And because there is no quantifiable, and again, the railroad admits this, there is no specific quantifiable bright line measurements that will cause carpal tunnel or other cumulative trauma disorders. There are none. And
what,
what
other potential causes, what alternative causes did Dr. Fletcher rule out of the causation question here?
Essentially, he looked at his history, and there were no other potential causes other than riding the motorcycle, and he did consider riding the motorcycle. And I think it's important to
distinction. And how did he rule that out?
He looked at riding the motorcycle as a hobby and doing the work at, 8, 10, 12, 16 hours a day.
Well, I guess I'm not sure I understand that. Use a jackhammer as an example. I mean, if he used a jackhammer 30 minutes in a week, yet he'd ride his motorcycle, let's say, 2 or 3 hours over the weekend, and the vibrations were similar, it would seem to me be difficult to rule out the motorcycle. Unless you knew something about the duration and how it was used and so forth.
But that's exactly what the cases say. He doesn't really have to rule it out as a contributing factor. He just has to rule it out as a sole cause. And so when he did his subjective analysis of how many hours he spent at work using these tools as a job versus how many hours he spent riding his motorcycle, he was able to subjectively say, riding the motorcycle, in my opinion, is not the sole cause of this guy's carpal tunnel when you compare it to how many hours and how many years he's been doing this heavy work at the railroad.
So he didn't rule the motorcycle in or out?
Well, he ruled it out as the sole cause.
How many years had he been riding the motorcycle?
Pardon me?
How many years had he been riding the motorcycle?
I don't think that was developed in the record. It wasn't developed. I do want to, on ruling out causes, I want to touch on something very important that I think the district court made a mistake in. And the district court criticized Dr. Fletcher for not ruling out smoking, for not ruling out genetic disposition. Except smoking is not a cause that needs to be ruled out. Smoking is a correlating factor. And we know there's a big difference between things that cause things and there's things that have a correlation. Correlation is not causation, and so correlation under differential etiology is not a factor that you need to rule out. The same thing for genetic disposition. A genetic disposition is not a cause of carpal tunnel syndrome. It's a predisposition towards it. And I think the district court talked about those two factors a lot as a reason why Dr. Fletcher was not reliable.
I have a quick question, and it is this. It seemed to me that the weakest part of Mr. Brown's case appears to relate to the shoulder injury, the one that was never definitively diagnosed. Can you give the best evidence that this injury was caused in any part by the railway's negligence? Because how does a doctor opine on a cause of injury that hadn't been diagnosed?
Yes, it was diagnosed. It's diagnosed as impingement. And impingement is a diagnosis. It has its own diagnosis code. I think I put that in my pleadings in the district court. It wasn't a cumulative trauma disorder. The shoulder was an acute injury. Dr. Fletcher says that in his report. Mr. Brown says that in his report. Dr. Grady says that. He was lifting up this heavy bar, felt the pop, went to the emergency room, and he couldn't take an MRI because of his pacemaker. So they did an arthrogram where they injected dye and did a x-rays afterwards, and it was diagnosed as impingement, which is a diagnosis. It's an injury.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Okay. Mr. Unrath. Well, of course, spelled correctly.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Rule 702 provides that expert testimony is admissible if the testimony is based on sufficient data and the expert has reliably applied the principles and methods to the facts of the case. Now, we submit that Dr. Fletcher failed to satisfy either of these criteria.
Now, the standard for FEL claims is the railway is liable if the railway's negligence played any part, even the slightest, in the injury. Why then would it be necessary to rule out all other causes? In other words, why does the expert need to rule out motorcycle riding as a contributing cause when we know that vibrating hand tools that Mr. Brown used were also a contributing cause? And if the railway's tools are a cause in any degree, isn't that sufficient to put a question to a jury?
It could be, Your Honor, but in this case, he failed to even establish that the tools, the vibratory tools, were a cause of his ailment. He took no studies of how often he used these tools. He took no studies of the forces exerted. He made no effort to investigate these at all, other than one thing. He had Mr. Brown stand in a parking lot of the BNSF, hold up the tools, and stand there to be photographed. That's all we have. Now, of course, he did have some experience in reviewing maintenance of way workers. He said 10 years earlier, he'd spent about 40 minutes watching them. He couldn't recall anything about it, didn't know what tools they used or anything else. He does recall that he saw them removing some brush and putting in some rails, but we haven't even established that the tools and the type of work he does for the railroad even causes this.
The work techniques didn't change much over those 10 years, though, did they?
I can't tell you that, Your Honor.
I
would imagine
same.
That there's been some change, but I don't. There's certainly nothing in the record that would establish that.
Your expert admitted that the amount and duration of exposure to work activities that cause these kinds of injuries is unknown, correct?
That's correct.
So why should it matter that Fletcher made no determination regarding frequency or duration when we know how long the man worked on the job?
To adopt that that viewpoint would be to say that summary judgment is impossible. It would also say that even expert witnesses would serve no purpose, because all the expert needs to do is walk in and say, he worked for the railroad, that's enough, let's call in the jury.
That is
not the law in this in this court.
Is it true that the railway refused to produce a written job description?
This came up in his reply brief, and I'd like you to ask the court to take a close look at what that interrogatory said. I'm quoting from memory here. He said, we would need job descriptions for any and all jobs that Mr. Brown might be qualified for or be qualified by seniority for. Now, the reason we can't answer that is because we're not sure what jobs he's qualified for. It's too vague. Had they said, please give us a job description of maintenance of way worker, track inspector, if they'd been specific about it, those things could have been produced. But they never came back. They never asked us about that.
Why was the expert not entitled to rely on Brown's own description of his job duties? Because if you disagreed with Brown's description, you can always cross-examine him.
Because the cumulative trauma disorder has always, in our courts, required scientific expert testimony to establish causation.
You know, Mr. Brown pointed out that the railways expert didn't have the supposedly critical frequency and duration data, but was able to come to a conclusion that the railway work did not cause Mr. Brown's injuries. So if the railway's expert didn't need this data, why does Brown's expert need it? I mean, are there set values known to cause injuries against which to compare his work activity? And if not, what's the relevance, much less the necessity, of that sort of data?
Let me ask you, Dr. Fletcher defined cumulative trauma disorder as a performance of repetitive work over a long period of time. The body wears out. And yet, remarkably, he admitted that this work may not be repetitive, that it consists of various tasks performed over time, and he made no attempt to determine just how long or how often he used these tools. He took Mr. Brown's testimony saying, well, I worked 8 to 16 hours a day, vague statements, but he never bothered to check into these. He never looked into how much he actually used the specific tools. He had nothing. His testimony, his expert testimony, was not scientific. It was not performed under his own definition of his methodology. It was merely a conclusion.
And one other question that I had, which was that you didn't distinguish Hardiman versus Norfolk and Western, the Sixth Circuit case that Brown has argued is particularly analogous.
The Hardiman case.
I thought it was Hardiman. No, Hardiman.
Hardiman, yeah. Your Honor, my fault. My fault, because I look at this case, and I should have been the one citing this case. I should have been citing this case on page one. And I'll tell you why. The case deals with carpal tunnel syndrome, just like our case. The expert was relying on differential etiology as his chosen methodology. Now, that requires, and this is by our own case law in the Seventh Circuit, an examination of not only the work activities, but activities outside of work. Now, this is what Dr. Linz, in the Hardiman decision, took a look at. He took an extensive history of his non-occupational work activities. He found out that he bowled in the past, but he quit doing it 12 years ago. Played golf once a year, but he used to play it more than that earlier. Coached softball. He played no racket sports. He performed no keyboard work. Certainly that would have an impact on carpal tunnel syndrome. He did not use power saws. And I like this part. He used a wood stove at home, but he bought his wood pre-cut. This is the kind of detail that Dr. Fletcher needed to provide. If you're going to use differential etiology to support your conclusion, you need to look in detail at the plaintiff's, at the patient plaintiff's activities outside the workplace as well as in. Now, Dr. Fletcher didn't do any of that. He didn't even look at any activity outside of work. He knew, for example, that Mr. Brown was a volunteer fire department, worked for the volunteer fire department as a volunteer, but he couldn't recall how he knew that. Never looked into it, never investigated, had no idea what tools he used, how often he responded to fires, what kind of weights he would have to lift. If this was the only gap in his investigation, then I think that this would be a matter for cross-examination. But it wasn't. His expert reports are filled with gaps. He saw the patient on August 2011 for the first time. He listed no other potential causes for his ailments and yet immediately concluded to a reasonable degree of medical certainty that the only cause could be his work for the railroad. And that's just not following a differential etiology. The key to this case is that he said that he would render an opinion on all of the potential causes of the patient's ailment and then systematically, and I'd like to emphasize that word, systematically rule out causes that would not be applicable. He looked at the fact that he rode a motorcycle. Actually, he didn't look at it. He didn't rule that in. And yet it's clear that this could be a very good big cause of carpal tunnel syndrome. He systematically decided that it wasn't even worth investigating. Where is the system in that? In the end, Dr. Fletcher did not systematically rule out motorcycle riding or any other potential ailment. What he did was simply systematically brush aside all other potential causes of his ailment. This court has held that ultimately the expert's opinion must be reasoned and founded on data, and above all, it must utilize the methods of the relevant discipline, and this is what Dr. Fletcher failed to do. As such, the district court's ruling excluding Dr. Fletcher's testimony cannot be construed as an abuse of discretion. If there are no further questions, we ask the court to affirm. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. How much time? 3 minutes.
The case that the district court cited, Stasier, was a keyboard case, and in that case they said keyboarding doesn't cause a carpal tunnel, and that's why the summary judgment was affirmed. Dr. Fletcher never said that the only cause of his carpal tunnel syndrome was his railroad work. What Dr. Fletcher said was that it was a cause that contributed to his carpal tunnel, and he doesn't have to rule out every other cause. Once he rules in the railroad work, then that's enough as long as he's able to rule out any other cause as the sole cause of the carpal tunnel. And that's exactly the analysis Dr. Fletcher did. He had enormous amount of data as part of his investigation into what Brown's work activities was and his medical condition both before and after his onset of carpal tunnel. And if that's what we're looking for, the quality of the data and the quantity of data that the expert has, then we should compare this case to Myers, where those experts had zero data, had no knowledge about the prior medical, and had no knowledge about what the guy did at work in order to cause his cumulative trauma disorders. And when you compare what Fletcher had to the doctors in Myers that were barred, Fletcher had just a tremendously more data, both qualitative and quantitative data, about the medical and about the work activities in order for him to make a reasoned opinion that the work activities played a part in his carpal tunnel, and therefore it's a jury trial case. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you both so much, really. The case will be taken under advisement. Thank you.